Biden's horrible plan to put politics above American security.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
So you may remember early on in the Biden administration, we actually filed a FOIA request. Hey, Biden administration, why did you remove the Houthis from the list of designated terrorist organizations by the Department of State? That was November 30th, 2023. And then, of course, do they respond? They don't respond to the FOIA, so we have to go into federal court in January, which we did. And then in the meantime, the Houthis are put back on the foreign terror list, and that's because they started firing at ships going through the Red Sea, and they were, again, they were firing on U.S. ships, international ships as well. And the U.S. has now said that they would consider revoking their recent designation of Yemen's Houthis as terrorists if the Iran-backed militants cease their shipping attacks in and around the Red Sea. President Joe Biden's special envoy for Yemen, Tim Leinderking, I'm going to say it, maybe I said that right, Will. He said, my hope is that we can find diplomatic off-ramps. Now, again, the question is that all the Houthis have to do? I mean, Will, is it basically, hey, stop firing at the ships going through the Red Sea. You can continue to fire at our ally, Saudi Arabia. We've got U.S. Troops that are about to be on the Gaza Strip to build that pier for humanitarian aid. We've got Iran upset. We'll get into that in a moment as well. And yet we're willing to take you off the terror watch list if you just stop firing missiles and rockets into ships trying to cross through the Red Sea.
Once again, this is the appeasement strategy of the Biden administration. We've seen it with how they treat Iran from day one, really how they've treated the Houthis since day one, because they wanted to reverse a Trump-era move of putting them on the foreign terror organization list that the State Department has. And you see it around the world, where weakness reigns supreme within the Biden administration. And even here, where they talk about diplomatic off-ramps with the terror organization. Yep. Keep that in mind. They're currently listed as a terror organization for them, and they want to find a diplomatic off-ramp with them. Since when do we start diplomatically negotiating with terrorists? Wow. It's like after 9/11, if they went to Al-Qaeda and said, hey, you know what? We have you as a designated foreign terror organization. Don't fly any more planes into American soil and bring down any more buildings, and we'll take you off that list.
Yeah, I mean, this is Tim Leinderking. He is the envoy to Yemen. He did this press briefing on May 3rd. Take a listen.
But my hope is the envoy for Yemen is that we can find diplomatic off-ramps to find ways to de-escalate and allow us to pull back eventually the designation and, of course, to end the military strikes on Houthi's military capability.
The military strikes on their military capability anyways. I mean, I guess we don't want to be in conflicts we don't have to be in, but they are a proxy of Iran. We've got Israel, which we'll get into a little bit later, has taken out some top Iranian generals. They're threatening to respond. Iran is threatening to respond, while we've got U.S. troops in Syria, Iraq, and of course, we're going to have U.S. troops in the Gaza Strip, which is pretty wild to say.
Right. And you also have to remember that as they're saying they want to find ways to de-escalate and end the military strikes, well, clearly the military strikes that they were doing weren't strong enough. They were tepid. Because if the Houthis haven't stopped these attacks, they weren't crippled. So now they're having to go to diplomacy, right? Because military option didn't work.
Yo, folks, your life, your liberty, it's at stake. And that's what we're focusing on our efforts on this month through our Life and Liberty Drive. But we can't confront the immense challenges we face today without your tax-deductible support. Have your gift doubled today at ACLJ.org. Right now, we are battling the Biden administration in court, one of our 18 pending lawsuits against the deep state over its dangerous decisions regarding the Houthi terrorists. Today, we're filing a critical amicus brief in the Georgia Court of Appeals. We'll talk about that. We come back to disqualify D.A. Fani Willis from prosecuting President Trump and remove the odor of mendacity, lying, that is hanging over our judicial system in this case. Be part of our Life and Liberty campaign. That's at ACLJ.org. Double your impact today. Donate today. to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Rick Rednell is joining us. Of course, an expert, both as someone who's been at the State Department, a top diplomat for the United States, ambassador to Germany, and director of national intelligence. And Rick, I wanted to go to you right on this Houthi designation and the fact that the U.S. is putting out through our special envoy that we would yet again, this would be the second time the Biden administration removed the Houthis from the terror list that the State Department keeps. They did this right away at the beginning of the Biden administration. Again, it looks like to try and play nice with Iran. And it would look like that would be, again, the same reason they would do it this time is that basically they want to make nice with Iran. We've got to get the Houthis off the list. So Houthis, please stop firing at the ships going through the Red Sea and we'll take you off the list. You don't have to do anything else.
Look, here's the problem is that the Houthis are a terrorist organization. They've been causing havoc in the entire region. But the Biden team only decided to take action once they started attacking in the Red Sea. The Biden team just literally has a Red Sea focus. They're not concerned about the terrorist attacks in the rest of the region. And when they were added, when the Biden team added the Houthis, it was only because of the Red Sea attacks. Now what they're saying is, if the Houthis will pull back from Red Sea attacks, then they will remove them from the terrorist list. Really what the Biden team is saying, go do terrorism outside of the Red Sea, and then it will be none of our business. And I think that's a dangerous message. Under the Trump administration, we put the Houthis on the terrorist list for all of their action, their destabilizing action in the region, because the Iranians were giving them money and using them to really attack Saudi Arabia. Don't forget, they've attacked the UAE under the Biden administration. This has been an unbelievable move by the Houthis that has been unrestrained until they went into the Red Sea.
Yeah, and then we've got our own troops. I mean, we've got this attack by Israel on Iranian commanders and IRGC commanders, but we've got our own troops a couple days away from the Gaza Strip where they're going to be building that port for humanitarian aid. We've got Iran threatening to respond and retaliate for the killing of the Iranian guard commanders. So we've got the Houthis, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. We've got our troops in Syria, in Iraq, and we've soon got our troops in the Gaza Strip.
Look, there are very few issues that unite the pro-Israel community, evangelicals, and the pro-Arab communities. I mean, certainly they're united around the fact that there was no war during Donald Trump's presidency and there were peace agreements. But there's also a united front between Arabs and Israelis and pro-Israel crowd and the pro-Arab crowd, in that Iran is the problem and that Iran didn't have money under the Trump administration. Once Biden came in and relieved the sanctions, gave the Iranian regime credit and cash to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, then we saw Iran start funding all of these terror groups, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis. There are a whole bunch of other groups that are beginning to destabilize in Syria, which is why the Israelis now are acting in Syria. We've seen them destabilize Lebanon. Now there's some talk of a strategy to destabilize the Kingdom of Jordan. This is really becoming a problem, and it all boils down to funding Iran. No one should be surprised that when you give the Iranian regime hundreds of billions of dollars, that they're going to do more terrorism.
And then what is concerning me, Rick, this port that we are going to build in the Gaza Strip that is supposedly for humanitarian aid, putting our U.S. troops in, you're leaving it up to Hamas to decide how to treat U.S. troops. You're leaving it up to these groups like the IRGC and that operate in the Gaza Strip. And of course, the Israelis. I mean, there's an active war going on where there are non-combatants that get caught up in the conflict as well. And I mean, I think for the first time in all these conflicts that we've seen, we're going to put U.S. troops right in the middle of it.
Yeah, for me, the big problem is the sequencing, because certainly talking about getting rid of the leadership that is atrocious in the Palestinian territories that's not working for the people. Remember, Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian leader, was elected in 2005 to a five-year term. He's now in his 18th year of his five-year term. Now we're talking about just having Abbas appoint somebody, and that's now the new government. I mean, this is total chaos. We're going to need to deal with the Palestinian governments. We're going to need to deal with what do we do about getting rid of the bad actors and rebuilding and trying to move forward. All of those conversations are legitimate, but not now. The reality is we still have hostages, American hostages. And until Israel gets all of the hostages back, we shouldn't be talking about rebuilding or what comes next. We should be supporting Israel in getting our hostages back and getting the other hostages back. That is the sole focus. This is a sequencing issue.
I mean, that is my issue, Rick, with kind of like this whole discussion, whether it's the Houthis, whether it's building this port for aid for the Gaza Strip, and while you've got 100 plus hostages, as you said, there's still American hostages, some that are alive, some that are dead. We don't know all the details yet, and yet we're acting like this is like over. And this is far from over. There are strikes going on. Again, Iranian top leaders taken out by the Israelis over the weekend. Iran saying they're going to respond. I mean, this is still a very active conflict, and we don't even know, I guess, how far it will spread. You know, will it spread to the north with Hezbollah? What will the Houthis do? Of course, we're saying the Houthis, hey, stop shooting on the ships going through the Red Sea. But what about stop shooting at our allies in the Gulf states?
Yeah, look, all these are legitimate questions, and you can't be surprised that terrorists do terror. That's what they do. And when you fund them, that's what you get. And so what I think that we need to be able to do is be very clear as the U.S. government that we are supporting Israel and getting back the hostages, for one. And two, we're not going to deal with Hamas. We're not going to have debates or negotiations with terrorist organizations. By the way, Jordan, there are a whole bunch of Arabs that support that position. They don't want to deal with Hamas. Whether you're talking about Turkey, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, they would like to see the region developed without Hamas. And so we need to be leaning on our Arab partners to say, work with us, get rid of these terrorists who are leading the Palestinians, and then we can talk about rebuilding. And the Arabs are going to have a big role in this. But the first focus, get our American hostages and other hostages back, and then get rid of the Hamas leadership that we can then have conversations with others to talk about rebuilding.
Rick, obviously there's a lot of complications potentially here. If we had a different administration that wasn't just dangling out, hey, if you stop doing this, we'll pull you back off the terror list like we did right when we came in as the administration, which the ACLJ filed a FOIA on about why did they even do that? I mean, what was even the point? The Houthis were already committing acts of terror. There was no reason for them to be taken off the list. Our only guess is that it's because they want to deal directly with Iran, and because they're an Iranian proxy, they had to take them off the terror list. But could this quickly be turned around? I mean, and quickly, I mean, to be fair, can we get this going in the right direction again like it was towards the end of the Trump administration?
Look, I'm a pretty positive person. I believe that the glass is usually half full. But the one thing that I learned about being at the UN for 8 years is that nothing can replace American leadership. When there is American leadership, a lot can get done. And our partners and others around the world want American leadership. And so I think that what we've seen over the last 3.5 years is a lack of U.S. leadership, certainly from the State Department, certainly from Jake Sullivan, who's an academic, doesn't really know what he's doing in the real world. And Joe Biden, as we see, is kind of fumbling and relying on people like Blinken and Sullivan to lead on foreign policy, but they don't know what they're doing. And so what we really have is a lack of U.S. leadership. We are in defense mode. We're responding. We're not on the offense.
Yeah. Rick, as always, we appreciate all of your insight. We appreciate being part of our team at the ACLJ. And folks, Rick Rennell is part of our team at the ACLJ because of our supporters and because of people like you who take part in our Life and Liberty Drive. Right now, your gifts will be doubled today at ACLJ.org. Today is a big day for us. We urgently need you and your support now during our Life and Liberty Drive. You can have your gift doubled at ACLJ.org. ACLJ.org. And if you are able, please become an ACLJ champion. You know, we talk about ACLJ champions. We'd like to hit 21,000 champions in the next few days. Those are people that donate monthly to the ACLJ automatically. You choose an amount that you're comfortable with. We are only about 159 people short of our goal. Earlier this morning, it was 161. So we've had more champions sign on. So we encourage you again to go to ACLJ.org right now. Be part of our Life and Liberty Drive. And again, if you can, become an ACLJ champion. You're right at the tip of the spear. Whether it is the work we're doing in Georgia to remove DA Fani Willis, the work that we're doing in the Middle East, the work that we are doing for Israel, the work that we are doing for life. When we come back, we'll talk about that as well. Back to Secular. We are taking your calls, 2-1-800-684-3110. If you want to weigh in, that's 1-800-684-3110. And I'd love to hear from ACLJ champions. If you're an ACLJ champion out there, someone who has decided to make that monthly donation to the ACLJ, give us a call. Let people know why you have decided to become an ACLJ champion. It can be a number of those issues that we talked about, and we certainly talk about a lot of them today, whether it's the situation with the Houthis that we've talked about with Rick, whether it's the situation with Israel, whether it is the situation right here in the United States in the battle for life. As we have seen since the Dobbs case and the overturning of Roe versus Wade, there's been a new battle for the life of the unborn. It's been happening at the state level. The ACLJ has been directly involved. We knew this battle would begin, and we knew it would be a battle of education and a battle inside the courts. Jeff Surte is a senior counsel with the ACLJ, is joining me now. And Jeff, again, this is a victory out of federal court in Kentucky as well. Tell people about this one and a case that we've got very soon that we will be filing with the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's right, Jordan. Yeah, we filed suit back in 2021 against Louisville's abortion buffer zone law that prohibits pro-life speakers, including sidewalk counselors, from getting within a certain distance of not just abortion clinics, but all healthcare facilities within the city. So anyway, we filed the lawsuit, and after the district court denied our motion for a preliminary injunction, we took that up to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and in short order, that court, the Court of Appeals, great opinion by Chief Judge Sutton, said no, the district court was wrong, a preliminary injunction should enter, and so our clients and others were protected under the First Amendment to be able to engage in pro-life speech outside these facilities. Well, usually, Jordan, as you know, what happens in cases like this where you win a preliminary injunction at the Court of Appeals, you know, the writing is on the wall, and the other side will fold once you get back to the district court. Well, that didn't happen here. The county said, oh, okay, yeah, we lost that on appeal, but you know what? This case is moot because abortion is illegal in Kentucky. So they tried to dismiss our lawsuit in its entirety. We came back with a briefing, and we had an evidentiary hearing last fall where we argued that even though abortion for the time being is illegal in Kentucky, our clients are still giving a powerful pro-life witness outside the clinic that's still open, although it doesn't provide for abortions. It does give referrals for abortion. Our clients still go there. They still go to the Planned Parenthood Center where they get a public pro-life witness to the message and hope of life. And so this case isn't moot. They're still engaging in free speech activities in traditional public forums, on public sidewalks. Well, anyway, Jordan, this last weekend, we got a ruling from the district court denying the county's efforts to dismiss our case on grounds of mootness. So the case is going to move forward. There's a hearing scheduled in the next month or so where we are going to make the argument that this ordinance is unconstitutional under the First Amendment, and the county should lose, and our client should be given a permanent injunction, a permanent right to be able to speak freely about their pro-life views and to pray outside these abortion clinics.
And Jeff, just to explain to people too, we also know that the restrictions on abortions in the post-Roe world, they're also under legal challenge everywhere across the country, whether it was a legislature or it is a law that's passed by that has been kind of an amendment that people have supported or amendments that have failed. We know that it's kind of all over the place as we speak right now. And so it's a very important time to protect pro-life speech, because as we all knew, that the day that Roe versus Wade was finally overturned and that it came through the Dobbs case would be the day that pro-life speech would actually become the most important speech. And that's because we'd be able, Jeff, to finally bring this debate outside of Washington, D.C., to the kitchen table, to our communities, to talk about abortion. And that's what these counselors do. And again, we've got a case in New Jersey, similar case, that we are appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court as well.
That's right. Yeah, they're in Englewood, New Jersey. We filed a lawsuit against that city for its abortion buffer zone law, which is actually very similar to Louisville's. And that case has been around a long time. We've gone up and down to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals multiple times. And now the Third Circuit has said, no, this ordinance is perfectly constitutional under the First Amendment and under governing Supreme Court decisions. And quite frankly, the Third Circuit got it wrong. And so at the end of the month, we're going to ask the Supreme Court to intervene in this case and to get to set the record straight and to correct the law, and let the Third Circuit know and every other jurisdiction in the country know that if you're going to suppress speech on public sidewalks, you have got to have a compelling reason to do so. And suppressing speech has to be the last resort of a government in trying to further its ends, not the first option to take. And that's the first option that Englewood, New Jersey, took. It's the first option that Louisville took in trying to deal with activities outside their abortion clinics, to suppress speech, not to deal with conduct.
Jeff, as always, we appreciate your insight into these cases and the work that we do, that you do for life and to protect the pro-life speech. You know, Will, on these cases too, we're fighting back to correct some wrongs that have been decades long when it comes to pro-life speech.
That's right. Specifically, the Hill v. Colorado Supreme Court decision, which was under a more liberal court, but we believe was a wrong interpretation of the Constitution and the law. And one avenue to see that potentially overturned is through the cases like the Turco case that Jeff and you were just talking about. And we know that some deference was paid to our side within the Dobbs decision, where Justice Alito mentioned that bad law had come out of Roe v. Wade and specifically cited Hill v. Colorado. And so we're hopeful that the Supreme Court, under the makeup that we have now, will see an opportunity to undo some of that bad law by overturning Hill v. Colorado through a case like the Turco case, which we are filing cert very shortly.
Yeah, I mean, this could, again, change pro-life speech significantly and rewrite the history on pro-life speech, which is why we said, you know, the Dobbs case, it's just the beginning of the impact of what it meant to overturn Roe versus Wade, what it meant for the actual issue of abortion, what it meant to have the conversations again. Did it mean we're going to win in every state and in every conversation we have right away? No, but it lets us have the debate. And it doesn't force the debate to be stuck in Washington, D.C. Now, on these other bad laws that came out of Roe versus Wade, like restrictions on speech because it happened to be pro-life speech, we are taking cases, ACLJ cases, back. And again, they're relevant yet again. And we believe they can be reversed. You could actually change Supreme Court precedent when it comes to pro-life speech. So it is another very important reason to support the work of the ACLJ through our Life and Liberty Drive, which, again, it's the entire month. You can have your gift doubled today at aclj.org. But it's whether or not you support the ACLJ because the work we do on life, the work we do for the freedom of speech, the work we do for Israel, the work we do to combat terrorism, the work that we do to disqualify DA Fannie Willis from prosecuting President Trump so that we don't have this odor of mendacity hanging over our judicial system. All of that work that we do at the ACLJ can be a reason why you support the work of the ACLJ with a financial contribution. You can have your gift doubled at aclj.org. And of course, again, we're only 159 champions away from 21,000 champions. That's monthly automatic donor to the ACLJ, and your gift will be doubled today at ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. And while we've talked about a couple of issues today, the Houthis, our pro-life work, of course, our work in Georgia, as well as we filed today in the Court of Appeals in the state of Georgia. This is Donald Trump versus the state of Georgia. Here's our brief of the ACLJ that is filed. And this is to have Fani Willis removed from the case, that we agree with the judge that it was right to remove the special counsel, but that you can't just remove the special counsel, that you've got to also remove Fani Willis as well. And Will, we filed that today with the Georgia Court of Appeals through the ACLJ. Again, very important. It just kind of shows that all the different aspects of our work in just three or four different issues we talked about today already on the broadcast.
That's right. And we know that we have our offices abroad, and both the European Center for Law and Justice, which you just came back from, or our office in Jerusalem. We had Jeff Balaban on the broadcast yesterday with a report from there, and work all throughout the country, whether it be protecting free speech for those who want to pray or demonstrate outside of an abortion clinic. But we also have work like this, where when a judge basically lays out the roadmap for the removal of the DA, and then at the end of his order says, well, she can stay on. It felt very much like the James Comey plan, where he listed all the bad things Hillary Clinton had done, but said, but we're not going to charge her. That's how this felt. So when the president's lawyers appealed to the appeals court in Georgia at the end of last week, that opened the door for us to file an amicus to demonstrate to the court and lay out through this amicus what we see the law as here at the ACLJ. And that's exactly what we did today with the filing of this brief. Yeah. But do you want to take a call before we get to the end of the segment?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go to Warren in Idaho on line one. Warren, you're on Seculo.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I wanted to comment, like you'd asked about the champions and why we support ACLJ. And I kind of chuckled because, yeah, we're not Iran, but in a way, we're the proxy supporting you guys, because we can't enter those battlefields, but we can support the ACLJ as Christians and givers to have you guys take that fight on and stand for righteousness and stand for Israel, stand for our rights, and stand for Christians and the unborn around the world.
Hey, you know what, Warren? Let me thank you. And again, we're more than your proxy. We're standing up for you in those battles. And again, I think the way you think about it is exactly right for so many of our donors to think about how you're supporting our work, is that you're making sure our attorneys are able to be in court, whether they are fighting those pro-life laws, whether they are fighting bad laws in Europe, bad laws, you know, saving lives in Pakistan, whether they are fighting for Israel's right to exist and our office in ACLJ Jerusalem, whether they're fighting at the UN, the U.S. Supreme Court when it comes to pro-life speech, Capitol Hill with our government affairs team. I mean, you think about that. You as an ACLJ champion or ACLJ donor, make sure all of that work happens, and it continues to happen. It continues to grow. It expands. We're able to add to our team. We're able to take it up to a next level. And this is a great time to support the work of the ACLJ, because we have a life and liberty drive. You could double the impact of your donation. And again, we're also in court in Georgia. Like I said, I mean, I only mentioned this for a couple of minutes, but this in Donald Trump versus state of Georgia, the ACLJ is filing this brief today at the Georgia Court of Appeals to say, hey, Fani Willis, you need to go as well to correct this judicial wrong. So we fight the two-tiered system of justice. The whistleblowers that we support, like Garrett O'Boyle and the merits brief to the D.C. Court Circuit that we filed yesterday. Man, think about all of this work. All this work just in the last 24 hours to the Court of Appeals and the win there on the pro-life speech, to the Georgia Court of Appeals, that was in Louisville, in Kentucky, to the Georgia Court of Appeals on Fani Willis, protecting our judicial system, the same judicial system that can prosecute you if it can prosecute President Trump this way, fighting the for these whistleblowers to be able to use the whistleblower system. It's all through the American Center for Law and Justice. Double the impact of your donation. Become an ACLJ champion today. Donate today at aclj.org. We'll be right back with Mike Pompeo. Folks, welcome back to Secchio. It's great to have Secretary Pompeo back for a second day in a row with us because there is a lot happening around the world as our senior counsel for global affairs. First question, it goes to that President Biden has now announced through his envoy that he's considering Secretary Pompeo revoking the terrorist label from the Houthis if they stop attacking ships in the Red Sea. Just try to help us wrap our heads around the absurdity of this. We were not clear why the Biden administration did this when they first came into office with the Houthis, and they immediately removed the terror label, and then they stuck it back on them when they started firing on the ships, and now they're telling them, hey, if you stop firing on the ships, you don't have to do it, stop your other terrorism, but stop firing on the ships and we'll remove the designation.
Well, Jordan, it's unexplainable to me. You said it's absurd. I think that's kind. Let's go back to the first principle. The Houthis, a bunch of tribesmen in Yemen who have money and sophisticated weapon systems and training that comes from the Islamic Republic of Iran, are terrorists. They're committing terrorist acts. They have committed terrorist acts. We seldom take groups off terror lists just because they stop for a month or a year committing terrorist acts, because we know they are still in their core terrorists. And so you have this exactly right. The Obama administration had refused to put the Houthis on the list of terrorists. We placed them on that list, and then within a week or two of the Biden administration coming, they took them off. And now they're saying, hey, we'll do you a favor. You've already killed Americans. You've already caused Navy SEALs to have to jump in the water. You've fired missiles into Saudi Arabia and the Emirates. You're attacking ships. But if you stop for a little bit, well, maybe we'll de-designate you. We'll say you're not terrorists. First of all, it'd be untrue. Second, it would be dangerous, because what comes along with this designation are lots of penalties and punishments, which the central aim of is to deter the Houthis. Frankly, when you get it wrong, Jordan, at the macro level, and you don't punish Iran, the Houthis aren't going to stop until it's in their best interest to do so. And taking this label of terrorists off of them isn't going to stop them from wreaking terror on the region.
Yeah, I mean, do you think the Biden administration is at this point, Secretary Pompeo, because of the loss of U.S. leverage? Like, it's just they've got nothing else to try, so we'll just tell them, hey, stop firing at the ships in the Red Sea, which is hurting everybody's shipping, and we will look past all that terrorism that you just mentioned. I mean, firing into other countries, firing at U.S. troops, and the terrorism they're committing in their own country as well. Their support, of course, from Iran. But if they'll stop doing this, that's enough for the United States right now, as you said, to take away a designation which is very serious, because it also punishes those who support your terrorism.
Exactly right. Yeah, I do think in part this is kind of, if all you have is a hammer, everything's a nail. And so they have this little piece of leverage and they're hopeful that that'll maybe cause them to stop. In the end, Jordan, you and I know the reality. The only thing that's going to stop them is going after the head of the snake, the Iranians, and then taking out their capacity. That is going into Yemen through various means, not putting soldiers and sailors and airmen on the ground, but destroying their capacity to inflict this terror. We and our allies have the ability to do so. Those would be the two things that would really put this to bed. But sadly, they're going to take this half measure, and I'm confident that it'll do almost no good. I'll give you another great one that's connected. Remember in Venezuela, the Biden administration told Maduro, we'll take off a bunch of the U.S. designations and sanctions if you'll allow there to be a full and fair election. You'll let your opposition be on the ballot. We did that. We lifted those sanctions. Maduro, of course, took all those people off the ballot. And you should know, Jordan, we haven't reinstated them. He's running willy-nilly. The Houthis see that. The Iranians see that. The Russians see that. This is an administration that has lost its capacity to deter because they're unprepared to do the hard work to protect America.
I want to jump to this one because we have troops that are just days away, the news is reporting, from arriving in Gaza. This is to build what has been talked about as a aid pier for Gaza, into the Gaza Strip, and again, it's supposed to be humanitarian. But this also comes at the same time when you've got the IRGC, there's the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, after a strike in Syria with some of their top leaders. They are saying that they will retaliate. And you're also putting our troops kind of at the will of Hamas and their allies like Iran to build this pier. But I mean, it just seems like things are getting more dangerous, not less dangerous, and now U.S. troops are going to be right in the middle of it.
Oh, I think that's true. I also think it's a bit of an empty gesture. That is, I've seen the planning, at least as reported, for this pier. Boy, it is going to be a really difficult thing to make sure that this resupply that I think everyone wants innocent Gazan civilians to eat and have what they need. Sure. But to get this from our pier, the U.S. built pier, to actually to get them to them, you're going to have to run through the Hamas leadership. And we've seen time and time again that is almost certain to fail. You're right about risk, too. The more soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines we put inside the Iranian strike zone, the umbrella, which they places they can reach out to, the greater the risk. And I hope none of us will forget two other things that are taking place that are seldom reported. One of which is, since October 7th of last year, there have been over 100 strikes on American interests, American resources. And second, you still have Americans held hostage. And so to think that somehow we're going to solve this problem through building a pier off the coast in the Mediterranean, off the coast of Gaza, seems both foolhardy and dangerous.
Yeah, to me, it's just again, to put the troops in that kind of situation when you've got this active conflict going on, to me is yeah, foolhardy, dangerous is what you said. Exactly right. Secretary Pompeo, the final kind of question for you. We know that President Biden has got a call with Prime Minister Netanyahu today. We know the Democrats have been very outspoken, calling for Netanyahu to step aside, calling for his, you know, opposition to win, and kind of weighing in on his Israeli elections, or when there should be Israeli elections. Do you expect anything to come from this call directly that will aid the situation right now in Israel?
Jordan, sadly, I don't. I think this phone call is really about U.S. domestic politics. So Admiral Kirby or Karine Jean-Pierre can come out and say, look, the president spoke to Netanyahu and was really mean or was really angry or whatever it is the word of the day at the White House, where the United States is applying pressure to our allies and friends, but doing almost nothing to put pressure on the Iranian regime that is, in the end of the day, the terrorists that are holding Americans hostage, even as we sit here. So I don't expect much other than a press release from the White House saying, hey, we talked to Prime Minister Netanyahu and we told him to, I don't know, be better, to do things more efficiently. In the end, the Israelis are going to do the right thing. They're going to go take down the infrastructure of Hamas. That is good for them. It is good for the Gulf Arab states, and it's great for America as well.
Secretary Pompeo, as always, we appreciate having you as part of our team and a senior counsel for global affairs at the American Center for Law and Justice. And Will, you know, it's when we're talking about a life and liberty drive and our campaign here, doubling the impact of people's donations, Secretary Pompeo is a perfect example of those individuals we're able to bring on to the ACLJ team because of people's financial support. And today they make that donation, it's doubled.
Exactly. And when you think about the ACLJ, there's so many facets to what we do and the work we do, whether it be fighting for free speech and trying to protect the free speech of pro-life advocates, or whether it be protecting pregnancy resource centers across the country when state laws try to go after them to try to say that they're a fraudulent business because they're not an abortion clinic, which is one of the most absurd things that happens in this country, or whether it be bringing you this broadcast every day, 5 days a week, free of charge, not behind a paywall, and we put it on as many platforms as we can to try to get the analysis that comes from experts or from our legal team or from Logan, who's on with you most days, talking about the ins and outs of the media world as well. It all boils down to that we work here for the supporters. We take the goal in mind is to continue the furtherance of our work, whether it be in the legal realm or through the media, of getting out the constitutional values that we hold so dear and that this country was founded on and that are in such jeopardy as we look forward with the ways that this administration is attacking the rights of everyday Americans.
Yeah. I mean, we fight it in court, folks. We fight the policy. We've got the people like Secretary Pompeo and Rick Riddell to fight the policy. We fight in court. You've heard from our attorneys today going all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, but also at the Georgia Court of Appeals to take out Fannie Willis as DA because of, again, to protect our judicial system. We're filing there today. We just filed yesterday in the O'Boyle case, again, representing that whistleblower and making sure that those whistleblower protections mean something in the United States of America. This is all work done by the Americans for Law and Justice, the work that Rick Grenell does on behalf of the ACLJ, the work that Mike Pompeo does on behalf of the Americans for Law and Justice, the legal work our attorneys do, our government affairs team, our media team, as Will said, is one of our executive producers of our broadcast team, does as well to keep you updated on all of these issues. Again, it relies on our donors, our supporters, and this is a great time to become a donor to the Americans for Law and Justice. It's a really critical time. We need your support, folks, at the ACLJ. We need those donors. You can double the impact of your donation right now at ACLJ.org. And we are trying to get to 21,000 ACLJ champions. And we know we've added 4 or 5 more of those today. And those are people who donate monthly. So they pick a number that automatically donates each month to the ACLJ. And during these matching months, that means you get to take part in the matching challenge so that doubles your impact. I want you to donate today at ACLJ.org. Be a part of every one of these battles for life and liberty. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Final segment of Secula. We are taking your calls too and your comments. We've got a Mike in New Jersey online too. Hey, Mike, welcome to Secula. You're on the air.
Hi, I completely agree with Secretary Pompeo. Hamas is demonically crazy, and we are no one to tell another government how to conduct a war when we like extremely screwed up an attack of 19 people who all killed themselves.
Well, I think we've got a situation in Israel where the U.S. and the Biden administration, they started off, Will, very supportive of Israel as we thought they would be. But we said once the war went on and once there were more deaths and once it wasn't so pretty anymore and you've got, again, things that go wrong, that they would start condemning Israel. And now they're calling for, they're not voting against ceasefires. They are abstaining votes instead of voting against ceasefire calls, even when those ceasefires at the United Nations don't call for any condemnation of Hamas. And we saw the Biden administration do that this week. We see them willing to take the Houthis off the terror list because they are trying to placate Iran.
I think that the Biden administration is more concerned with the political reality of their election in November than they are with the fact that there are still Americans that are being held hostage by Hamas. Yeah. And you can see that by them trying to play both sides in this, by doing things that are beneficial for Hamas, such as not vetoing the UN Security Council resolution last week. But then you also see Karine Jean-Pierre, like you talked about yesterday, where she was going after Hamas, saying that they utilize hospitals and look how quickly they can rebuild. So they're trying to play it both ways. But I think it comes down to the fact is what something that was reported in The Hill yesterday, that Democrats are seeing this increasingly as a November issue for them, where they're not going to be able to get some of these coalitions that they normally rely on to win certain states, because those coalitions are either mad at them for their support of Israel or for not being tough enough on Hamas. Yeah. And so they're fracturing their own party. And there was even an anonymous House of Representatives member that was a Democrat quoted in The Hill that said, "I'm worried about what Chicago's going to look like." And that is a reference to the DNC, their convention in Chicago, when they formally nominate Joe Biden as their party representative. Yeah. They still go through those formalities, even though he's the incumbent. And what are we going to see? Are we going to see protests from the convention floor, from delegates that are upset Hamas because they're pro-Hamas? Are they going to be wearing keffiyehs on the floor of the convention? I mean, is it going to look
what
crazy?
A time. Think about the time to come out in your support for not just Palestinians, but your support for Hamas after the atrocities that they committed on October 7th. And we said so quickly how quickly the world would forget those atrocities on October 7th that happened to Jews in Israel when Israel struck back, and that they would then condemn the U.S. for even supporting Israel. But I do want to go, I want to take this comment that came in. Taryn on YouTube, she wrote, "I became a champion because I believe the ACLJ is an honest organization fighting for all of us when we can't legally engage in the fight, and most of us can't. And, you know, Will, I think that, you know, that a perfect example is filing in Georgia today in the Fannie Willis cases. We're able to do that as the American Center for Law and Justice, representing our the individuals who support the work of the ACLJ and saying she should be taken off that case involving President Trump because it is disruptive and wrong, and it makes our judicial system look bad. Just that case alone, the case we filed for Garrett O'Boyle and the whistleblower protections, these are for every American out there, for every ACLJ supporter.
And when you think about the Fannie Willis case, for example, on its face, if you hear, oh, they're filing in this that deals with a district attorney in Georgia, why does that really matter for me as the ACLJ supporter? Well, it's so much beyond just one proceeding in Georgia. It really goes to the heart of protecting the integrity of the foundations that this country was founded on, the judicial system. We have been proud of the U.S. judicial system throughout its history because it was breaking away from all of the negative things like star chambers in England and things where there wasn't the ability to be represented without the assumption that you're guilty or being able to put up a defense for yourself. All these things matter, and they've mattered for the entire history of the United States. So when you start seeing things like an odor of mendacity, which is an odor of lies in a case, and then all of a sudden it's just going to be able to continue on, we don't think that's the appropriate way. And so we're going to find creative ways as a legal organization to get involved because we want to protect the integrity of everyone's right to live in America and not have a biased judicial system against them. And we've got an uphill battle. Yeah, and that's why we need the support of ACLJ members and champions.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you think about the fact that you've got these protests going on, and yes, it starts at, you know, the liberal college campus, and then it goes into your city. And then they're worried that, you know, the Democrat convention could become a ground for major protests in support, not just of Palestinians, but against Jews, because we've seen the anti-Semitism that's been part of these protests, and actually support for Hamas and support for what Hamas did on October 7th and the tactics and the terrorism. And the fact that people have already forgotten how soon they forget what Hamas did to children, pregnant women, the elderly, kids, young people who are yes, we talk about the hostages, some alive, some dead. We forget about all of those who were killed brutally on October 7th. The over 1,000 Jews killed in one day, the most Jews in one day since the Holocaust. There's not been that many Jews killed, and it's certainly not that brutally on film, in the style of like ISIS on speed. I mean, really, that extreme level to target children that way, to target women that way, to target pregnant women that way. But yet, that is what we saw, and yet there's been a protest movement not against what we saw happen on October 7th, but a protest movement against responding to those attackers. And we predicted it right on this broadcast. I remember I was out on the West Coast. I said, this will last for about a week. You know, Israel will get a lot of world support. People will condemn these horrible attacks because that's what's on TV. And as Israel puts together its military and puts together its defense and decides when to strike, and they're going to strike hard, and they won't stop until they feel like they have gotten the job that they want done, which is to destroy Hamas, that quickly the world will turn on Israel. And we've seen it at the UN. We've seen our own country, the United States, go from voting against anti-Israel resolutions, including the Biden administration, to now just abstaining, just one vote away from voting against Israel. So even that has shifted. We've seen the Biden administration condemn Israeli leaders and condemn the Israeli response. And that is just, again, one aspect of what we do, one facet of what we do at the American Center for Law and Justice. Of course, it's the ACLJ Jerusalem. We want you to support our work, be part of our life and liberty challenge. It is critical that we need your financial support We're very clear these months. It's very important for the ACLJ. It's how we do the work that we do. It's because of our donors. And these months, if you become an ACLJ champion, that's someone who picks an amount like $50 and says, I can donate that each month. Well, this month, you'll actually get to take advantage of doubling that impact. So it'll be like $100 to the ACLJ. We are only 155 people.